Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm your host, Fabian Hicks, and this is The Council Connection. On today's podcast, we're going to have Barbara Truluck, Georgia School Counselor of the Year. I was in a segment on The Last Dance with two of my college friends, Michael Atwater and Damon Ryan from the Fort Valley State University. Of course, we have my housekeeping items and my final thought. I'll let you know what it is. In this part of the show, and I say, let's go. Line, we have Georgia's 2019 School Council of the Year, Barbara Truluck. Barbara, how you doing today?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's no problem. Now, we'll go ahead and get started in this. I want everybody to get to know you for those that might not know who you are. Give a little description about yourself and your school, what grade level, how long you're counseling, your why to counseling.
Okay, very good. I have been a school counselor for 6 years. Before moving to Georgia, I was a teacher in Florida, a middle school teacher for 12 years. And when we moved here, I decided to go back to school, and I really had a passion for becoming a school counselor. And I work at Palmer Middle School in Kennesaw, Georgia, in Cobb County. And that's where I've been years.
Okay, cool. So you're a Florida baby, turn into a Georgia peach pretty much, right? That's basically what it sounds like.
Exactly. I was born and raised in Florida and lived there most of my life, but absolutely love Georgia. So we're excited to be Georgia residents now. We actually moved up here when my daughter was recruited to play volleyball for Berry College. Mm-hmm. So we were those parents that followed their child to college. We didn't want to miss out on 1 minute of volleyball season. So that's actually why we moved here and just found our home here in Georgia and just love it.
Okay, that's awesome. Now, I can't get off this podcast. I know we can't go into this podcast without talking about the coronavirus and how has that affected, not per se you, but in your opinion, how has it affected education for this year?
Well, I think we're still all trying to figure this out. I mean, if we had said even 2 months ago that where we would be here today, everybody at home, you know, staying at home, learning from home, and jumping into this virtual world, anybody would have said, no way, you've got to be kidding. But here we are. I'm so proud of really our profession and education and teachers and school counselors and how we transitioned so quickly to the online and digital learning and all of those platforms and figuring them out quickly so we can best serve our students. I know it's been challenging for parents that have been thrown into this role of teacher. And it's tough on the students. You know, I mean, I think the biggest feedback that I hear from our students is just they miss their teachers. They miss the routine of going to school and they miss their friends. I know our superintendent put out an excellent letter that I just read this morning, Superintendent Woods for Georgia. And, you know, he was talking about just giving yourself grace during this time. And I think that's so important for everyone and really compassion over, you know, compliance. And that I think that we've all figured that out in the last couple of weeks, that we need to take a step back and take a breath and do just the very best that we can.
Now, I had a couple podcasts for the last couple of weeks. So this is one question I asked all of them, everybody that joined in. Do you think it's a possibility we might be going to more of a digital feel, even if it's just one day a week?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that that's the direction that we're going in. I don't see us turning back away from all that we've, really learned and jumped into with the digital learning. I think that's the wave of the future. I think we were slowly moving in that direction, and this was like the Band-Aid that got ripped off and said, "Now you got to do it." So, I think these digital platforms that we're using now, we are going to continue to use. And what it looks like in the fall, I don't know yet. I know there's talk about doing some hybrid programs, to lessen the density of students in the school building, but what that all looks like, we just don't know yet. But I think that digital learning's here to stay.
Okay. Now let me transition from that to, like I said before, you're a Georgia School Counselor of the Year for this year. Tell me about that. Tell me about the whole process and how you found out and your feelings on it and the whole gamut of emotions that you probably had. So talk to me about that.
Before I applied for Georgia School Counselor of the Year, I was the Cobb County Middle School Counselor of the Year, and I just come off of RAMP. We had just got our RAMP distinction that year, and then I applied for Cobb County Middle School Counselor of the Year, and that then of course I do the application for the Georgia School Counselor of the Year. And I was shocked. I was thrilled, excited when they announced it at my school, and it was really it was a wonderful surprise. I had Maria Grosvenor was there from the president of GSCA, and our superintendent, Mr. Ragsdale from Cobb County, and so much support of leadership of Cobb County was there. The teachers, there were students there, and I was completely shocked when I walked into the library and they announced it. It was a great surprise. But just being Georgia School Counselor of the Year, it's such an honor, and it's really humbling because there are awesome school counselors and wonderful work going on in the state of Georgia. And to be named the Georgia School Counselor of the Year is really, truly an honor. And just representing Georgia school counselors and having that voice and to advocate for the profession has been really great this year.
Let me do a follow up on that part with advocating for the profession. What is one or two things that you would tell those new counselors that are just for graduating the school, graduating grad school, about to take a job for next year, or the counselor that switched buildings to a new position? What would you tell them is the biggest thing for advocating for their program?
Definitely, the implementation of the ASCA School Counseling Comprehensive Model. That is so important to understand the program and the components and to work towards that implementation in your school. Definitely looking at data for your particular school because no two schools are alike. And what are the needs of your school population and your students? How can you best serve your students? And by looking at the data, you can see where your school counseling program can best meet those needs and help support your students. Definitely those two things. Know the model, work towards implementation of that, and then know your students through the data and the needs.
Okay, that's a perfect segue into my next set of questions for you, as far as implementing the model and knowing your student data. And in order to do our job, we have to know what our roles are. And I've been basically been talking about this for the last month and a half about design versus assigned duties. And what is the one assigned duty you think can be a hindrance to any school counselor implementing a national model?
I think it probably looks different at all three levels. I don't I don't know that there's one overarching assigned duty that I can talk about for all three levels. I think the elementary and the middle and the high school is different. I know in the middle schools, we spend a lot of time with records and new student registration, and that can pull time away from that 80% direct indirect with students. So that has been a balance that we've had to figure out. I know at my school is this last 2 years, we really advocated for getting a registration clerk at our school so the counselors could, you know, stay in the classrooms, run our groups, and not be tied up in the records room. So luckily I have an awesome administration team, and they saw that was a need, and we did get that clerical support and help in our department. So I think at all three levels, it really looks different, but overall school counseling, we can get tied up in those clerical duties. And I think that's one way to advocate to get those off of your, you know, plate. So then you're focusing on that comprehensive model.
What is one thing you could see as a way for counselors to advocate for those duties to be reassigned to somebody else? What's one or two things that you could see being done by any counselor that's a new counselor or a 20-year counselor to help have those duties removed?
So I think that really looking at what your school mission is, and really building that relationship with your administration team and your principal, and talking about how your school counseling program can help them with the overall arching school mission and how you can help support students' achievement and have students be successful. I know when we asked our administrator and our principal, what do you see our role as school counselors in the building is? And, you know, she says to support the social emotional needs of our students. That's a perfect answer. So then you look back, well, is this non-counseling duty or an inappropriate activity for school counselors? Does that fulfill that supporting social emotional? And if it doesn't, then we advocate to have that moved off of our plate.
Okay, cool. Now, I got one more question for you before we get you off.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been self-care is so overused. I'll say, okay, self-care. We use self-care. I know any type of educator is used to routine. You have your opening, you have your lesson, you have your ticket out the door, or you have your planning at this time. Then you go back to class, eat your lunch, and then you might have a meeting after this. Then you get home, you might grade some papers like that. Since mm-hmm. COVID-19 has come in, our routine has been pretty much thrown in the trash can and got taken to the dumpster. Mm-hmm. My routine every day is stay in my pajamas, log into a computer,
yep.
Go outside 4 or 5 times a day. What are you doing to keep you sane to the end of the school year?
Yeah, I think that looks like so many people, the way you just described it. I know that when we transitioned into this, it's very easy to get caught up of sitting in front of your computer all day long, answering emails, talking to students, Zoom meetings, all of those things. And before you know it, you've been sitting in front of that computer for hours on end. So the one thing that I've done is to make sure to take breaks to get up, and I've been putting my walking shoes on and going for a walk around the neighborhood. The weather's been beautiful lately, but just making a real effort to remember to get up away from the computer.
Well, Barbara, it was a real pleasure to speak with you, and congratulations on being named our school counselor of the year for Georgia. And hopefully we'll have our leadership meeting in July. So I hope I get to see you then.
I do too. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone, and just want to wish everyone stay healthy and stay safe, and we'll get through this together, supporting each other.
All right. Thank you, Barbara. You have a good one.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right
Bye-bye.
back. More Council.
Welcome back to the Council's Connection. I am your host, Fabian Bix, and this week we're going to have a special segment on The Last Dance, discussing the 97-98 Chicago Bulls and their final championship win. And on the line, we have a good friend of mine from the Fort Valley State University. We have Michael Atwater. Michael, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, Faye? What's the deal?
Same thing, different day, man. Tell everybody out there that might not know who you are, what you do.
Man, I'm Mike Atwater, man, Fort Valley State University, dual degree graduate. I am a preschool principal in Rome, Georgia. I also referee high school football, referee high school basketball, and I coach AAU basketball up here in the Rome area, Rome Elite. I have a sports show on YouTube, Rome Elite Sports, and got another sports show called Northwest, or Friday Nights in Northwest Georgia. So I'm a big sports guy in Fade. That's my little brother. Told me to jump on. We're going to talk some sports tonight. So, yeah, just trying to promote my boy's show.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Tom McCullough.
All right,
before we – I know we're going to talk – we're going to go in depth with this Michael Jordan and The Last Dance, but let's talk about basketball right now and COVID-19. Do you think we're going to get the rest of the season – anytime soon for this year?
I honestly think, man, that they are I think they're kind of rushing this, you know, coming out of this ban. I think this is serious. And first of all, before I continue, I hope everybody out there is being safe with this COVID-19 stuff, man. Everybody take your precautions, your social distancing and the whole nine. But at the same time, man, I think what's going on, I think maybe by end of May or June, we may have a basketball season. It's going to be a segmented season. It ain't going to be the whole season. But I think eventually it's going to be a season. I'm more concerned with fans and media people and that kind of stuff. How are they going to be a part of this kind of thing? So I think eventually, especially with basketball, it'll get back to it. I'm kind of concerned about football. I think eventually, you know, we will get some – basketball going back here pretty soon.
Okay. And one more question. This gonna make you laugh, and you're probably gonna crack on me when I ask you this. Anyway, was I the worst co-host on your sports show, Fort Valley?
No, you wasn't. I mean, you knew your stuff when it came to the basketball and football and whatever. You knew your stuff. So by far, you weren't the worst co-host. Man, we had fun on that show. We really, really had fun on that show, and you knew your stuff. And actuality, I want to groom you into. I mean, I don't want to sound like Sandusky and then talking about grooming you, but I want to groom you into, you know, getting your own show. And, you know, because that word grooming didn't really sound good, you know, another man talking about grooming another man. But I digress. But I mean, you really knew your stuff, man. Because we did the draft on the show one time, and I mean, we just did several things. So you knew your stuff. So, by no means were you.
Well, I had to get that out of the way.
That's becoming a breakout star across campus, you know? So you weren't worth by no means, bro.
The Blair Witch Project, that was our best work right there.
Yeah. You weren't.
That was our best work.
There were some good days on the show, man. I'm happy to be a part of your show now here on this podcast. So, that was pretty good.
All right, let's jump into this last dance. What was your biggest takeaway from this last night?
The biggest takeaway I had from The Last Dance last night was how underpaid Scottie Pippen was. Scottie Pippen had a 7-year contract worth $18 million. And I think Scottie Pippen mindset. Scottie said he grew up in Hamburg, Arkansas, and said a population of 3,500. That was a population of our college campus when we went to Fort Valley, 3,500 to 5,000 people. I think Scottie had kind of settled with the money he was getting, and he had a comfortable life. He was able to help his family. So his mindset wasn't thinking of, you know, I need to get more than I'm worth. I think his mindset was, hey, I'm comfortable. My family taken care of, and we win it. So I don't think he was tripping on it, but I think somebody finally got in his ear and told Scotty,
man, you should be worth way more than you are.
Scotty was 122nd in the league at that time in salary. And arguably, Scotty Pippen is one top 30, 40 players to ever play basketball. So that right there, and just the fact how people have something good and they want to break it up, kind of, you know, don't make sense to me, but that was kind of crazy to me that you've been winning these championships. And to be honest, Fade, they could have arguably won 8 championships in a row if Jordan don't retire and play baseball. So, you know, I'm not understanding why he wanted to retire, but, hey, I mean, you know, Jerry Cross wanted to break it up. You know, what it is.
You mean you like to do hypotheticals. We're going to get back to the Last Dance. We got plenty of time to talk about that. Let's say, for instance, Phil Jackson signs up for one more year. Dale Harris is not the coach of the Lakers.
Okay.
But the Lakers get somebody like, we'll say back then, we'll say Don Nelson. We'll say Don Nelson go to the Lakers in 99-2000.
Okay.
And Phil Jackson stays with the Bulls. Even though 98-99 was a strike shortened season, the Bulls probably would have won the championship that year if they kept them together. Let's just say they stayed together the next year.
Okay.
Do you think the Bulls would have beat that Lakers, that 99-2000 Lakers team?
Man, it's just funny, man. I literally, 15 minutes ago, was just talking to Damon Randall about that, another Fort Valley guy, man. And I told him, I'm going to be Jerry Cross' defense attorney right now. I can kind of see why he kind of want to split it up. Because if you look at that 98 season or look into the future, you had a 14-year veteran in Michael Jordan. You had about a 12-year veteran in Pippen, which all these guys were pretty much at the peak of their game. You had like a 10-year guy in Horace Grant. Dennis Rodman been there a couple years. Tony Kukoc, Ron Harper. You had a bunch of old guys.
And if the best way to go out on top
is by winning every game, I mean winning every finals, you've done that. I don't know if that Chicago Bulls team in another 2 years would have beat that Laker team with Shaq and Kobe. I just don't know. Because Shaq and Kobe and them went on that dynasty, winning 3 straight. So my point is, I honestly believe they split it up at the right time. Just my opinion. They stopped it at the right time. You won 6. You went out on top. Nobody has ever played in the championship, won like that many games in a row. You know, won like that. I think they did the right thing. But I see what Cross was thinking. He was thinking, this journey needs to end. We're going to go out on top, and that's going to be it. Now, I possibly could have won 1 or 2 more, but you went 6-0 and easily could have been 8-0. So I'm defending him on that. I mean, it don't sound right, but I'm defending him on that, you know.
All right, how do you look at – my wife brought up something to me. She brought up a good point with Mike kind of contradicting himself with Scotty.
Last night,
I don't know if you called him selfish at one point, but on the present Mike. But then going back to when Scotty was out with his ankle surgery, he's saying we got to do what we got to do. Scotty going to get healthy, we'll be okay. Do you think that's kind of two-faced of Michael, or you think Michael was just trying to be media savvy at that part?
I don't know how, you know, when you over here making $36 million and I'm making $2 million, it's easy for you to call me selfish because you're getting your money. I think Mike was wrong for saying that. I think because there's one point in that show last night where Mike said, I couldn't have won this without Scotty. He's the best team I ever had, but he's selfish because he's sitting out wanting his money. Well, Mike, were you going to sit out for your money? That's my question with him. But, you know, I don't know how contradictory it could have been. I just think that Michael
Jordan knew he couldn't win without Scottie Pippen. And he had to say anything he could to get him back on the court. It's just, you know, it's just like our
wives. Sometimes they're going to say stuff to us that we don't want to do.
They're going to say
that right word. Now we up and doing it, you know. Honey, I need you to go out there and plant the garden. I need you to do this. I need you to go do that. And we may
give a couple words in there.
But they may say the right word or words, and we up.
And maybe that's what Mike was doing with Pippen, you know?
So.
All right, I know the audience is probably thinking it might have watched it, might have not watched it. We might have seen like we're jumping around, but it's everything ties into the first two episodes what we're going to be talking about. And it's going to jump in between both episodes. I found it crazy. To me, I'm okay. 86. We'll go back to the playoff series. 86. Bulls lost 3-0. Jordan averaged about what 50 that series, mm-hmm. right? I think it was 50. It was 50 that series. The next year they got Scottie in a trade with Seattle. Imagine Seattle won and traded Scottie. He had the glove and Kim.
Woo! That could have been a dynasty right there. Scottie, Payton, and Son Kemp. Deadlift Shrimp shooting them threes.
You get Nate.
Yeah.
Nate McMillan still in the backcourt with that one of the deadliest defensive backcourts next to Ron Jordan.
Yeah. That's nice there. Now, I don't know if we want to save it for another time we do a show. I'm going to bring this up to you. This one discussion that's been going on Facebook and one discussion that we've been talking about, me and the fellas. The 98 Bulls. Well, the Bulls era, 96, 97, 98, or the Golden State Warrior team, 17 and 18 with Kevin Durant. Who you got in the seven-game series?
Bulls and five.
Woo!
Bulls and five. I'm going to tell you why. You have three of the greatest wing defenders in the NBA on one team.
Okay.
6'6", 6'6", 6'7". Scottie's wingspan was 7'4", if I remember right. He could guard Durant. You don't have to switch. He'd guard Durant the whole game. That's no problem. Draymond and Robin would have got Draymond here so bad. The center is a wash.
Okay.
The bench might have stole a game or two for Golden State. But Steph or Clay could not. I'm not a Mike fan, but Steph or Clay is not going to stop Jordan. Right now, Atwater, I got another special guest that just hopped in on here. Introduce yourself.
This is Mr. Randall. What's going down?
What's going on, Damon?
Hey, not too affected. What's going on?
Going on. Mike, I got Damon.
What's
on
up,
Damon? And now.
What's up, bro?
We just got into discussion with the 17 Warriors versus the second Dynasty Bulls.
Okay. Tell them what you just said.
I told him the Bulls are winning five.
Ooh.
So he got the 96, 97, 8 Bulls winning in five over Golden State. I told Damon this.
I think we lost Atwater. Hold on. Let me link him back.
Okay.
In. Hold on. What be going on,
bro? Hey, man. Ain't nothing going on, bro. Coronavirus running through my family. But other than that, it's been cool. How you been, man? Everything good?
Yeah, everything good, man. We were talking about the Last Dance last night. Give me your biggest takeaway from last night while we were waiting for Atwater to hop that ball.
Well, yeah, I didn't really get a chance to see it. I got to catch the replay. I've been here. Now, Mike and I was talking about it, and everybody I talked to was like, they was mad at the owner because the owner wouldn't give the GM the go ahead and sign Mike. You underpaid Pippen tremendously. You know, that's one of the reasons why the boys won trying to get together and all that. I just think I told Mike the owner really has the ultimate say so. And you know you underpaying this man. You know his worth and you ain't giving him the money. Why not let him get his other championships? Let's see if they really owe and let's make this run. Cause Mike didn't want to lose Pippen. He was mad that they didn't really give feel that chance. So I say, man, let them. I mean, most teams, once they find out they're too old, then you break them up. How do we know? You know what I'm saying? Mike was still balling. How do we know?
I hit the wrong button, fella. My bad.
You good?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was telling Atwater also, I had brought up a scenario. Let's say Phil do stay on after that 98 season. And the Lakers go ahead and fire Dale Harris, but they bring in Don Nelson. Would those same 98 Bulls beat the 2000 Lakers?
Amen.
Like I said, we just got through talking about this, literally.
Don Nelson, I don't know. Different style of coaching, different style of play.
They're younger. Those Lakers right. are younger. They're more talented than the Run TMC team. Mm-hmm. A little bit more deeper.
Shaq was that dominant force nobody wanted to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And in shape.
Right.
Shaq was in shape.
The only thing you don't want to do, really, if I'm the Lakers, is have Shaq in the game. You got to sub all the time, offense for defense, because you can't foul him. Mm-hmm. You can't foul him. He'll lose you a game if you leave him in there to shoot free throws. Back then, he was in shape. He was dominant. But, man, he shot like 40-some% from the free throw line.
Yep.
So slowing the game down, fouling, and doing all that, that's almost demoralizing the Lakers because they know. They know what's going on. Hack a Shaq.
Let me just say this to you, Faye. And I was talking to Damon and Rachel about this the other day. Let me just say this to you. You said the Bulls in five over the Warriors. Let me say this. The Golden State Warriors is the 2017-2018 Golden State Warriors. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to put this out here for everybody. I hope everybody out here in TV land is listening, or podcast land. Hope you guys are listening, because I got a bold statement I got to make. I'm standing like Stephen A. Smith, okay? Let me make my statement. Let me make this statement right here. The 2017-2018 Golden State Warriors is the greatest NBA team of all time. There is no way Jordan them will beat him in five. Golden State will beat them in five and six, and let me tell you why. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson, when they walk in the gym before the game even start, they got 12 three-pointers off the top without even blinking. That's 36 points right there. Nobody, and you can't say you have never seen nobody stop Kevin Durant. I don't give a damn who it was, Pippen, whoever it is. Nobody's going to stop and Kevin Durant, Curry, or Klay Thompson. Curry and Klay Thompson are arguably two of the 5 or 10 best shooters ever. So
There's one person that did stop Durant. There's one person. Russell Westbrook.
How Russell Westbrook stop him?
Because he can't shoot.
Man, please. Ain't nobody stopping Kevin Durant, man. Kevin Durant, 6'11", with a 7'7 wingspan.
No, you're not catching what I'm saying. I get that. You're not catching what I'm saying. The only person that stopped Kevin Durant was Russell Westbrook.
You got to hear what he's saying. Because of the he shoots a lot. You negate shots from him. Russell Westbrook negates shots from great players. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, that's messed up. You took a shot. That's real messed up.
I like Russell, but he ain't made out of the first round the last 3 years. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you still took a shot, though.
It's his team.
Took a.
He ain't listen to my podcast. He ain't listen to my podcast, so I know about him.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. That's very valid point, Mr. Vicks. Very valid point. So,
man, everybody like that water.
Before I get out of here, Wednesday night, can you, myself, Damon, and maybe we get one or two more guys? Can we get our mock draft going?
Okay, here. Hey. Hold on. I get you on that mic, but I'm going to tell you, this thing, Faye, let me say this, bro. Yeah. On Facebook, Mike put the post up. Me and Trent went back and forth for about 2 hours. And he was pulling up stats. I was pulling – because I was in agreement with you. I didn't say five. I thought it would go seven. I actually thought the Bulls, that's the one team that would be able to push because of the all-around game of Pippen, the superb defense of Rodman, and I don't think nobody on Golden State could stop Jordan from scoring. Okay, so – and I also made the point of the physicality of defense they played. Now – I didn't take into consideration, like I should have, the Mike D'Antoni type of run and gun ball that go on right now. You got a fast break team with dead eye shooters on there, and probably virtually one of the most unstoppable players you've ever seen in Kevin Durant. His IQ is impeccable. He knows how to use mismatches to his advantage. Now, three of those guys, as soon as they cross the half court line, you must guard. You got to guard them because they will murder you if you don't. The Bulls didn't shoot a lot of threes. They killed you with Pippen being all around and Mike doing what he do. I was on your side, man, until they started pulling up stats. That turned me around, bro. Not to mention the different styles of ball that they play. That's what that right there turned me around. Now, Trent was bringing up some stats. They were from 1765, but they were great stats. he brought up the 82 Nuggets that averaged a whole lot of points. I'm like, damn, that's Kiki Van der Wey, Adrian Dantley. So,
Alex English,
right. So, I understood his points. They were valid. And I just kept saying the X factor out of all of this is Kevin Durant. It's Kevin Durant. He is the one that scares any and everybody because of what he does and what he's able to do. So I was with you, Faye. I didn't say five. I actually thought it would be a seven-game series. I actually thought it was going to be seven because Golden State has three guys that can kill you and win a game and steal a game for you. That's why I said seven. I couldn't take nothing away from that Golden State team. I was like, defense, man. It's gonna be some defense. These boys ain't felt that physicality of defense, and they're like, how? They ain't gonna feel it because they're gonna be up and down the court. And even in a half court setting, man, you got three niggas that were there, man. They'll burn your lights out. So it's that right there. That's one of the most. It's gonna be argued all the time.
Hey, well, Faye, before I get out of here, man, let the world know what you got going on with this podcast, so we can let the world know. You know?
Yeah.
For those that might be listening to this, just for Atwater and Damon, I'm a school counselor. I'm in Henry County Schools. I've been doing this is my first year doing a podcast dealing with education, school counselor. I just thought during COVID-19, we needed a break from education. This is something that we could talk about. I think everybody seen Jordan. Everybody heard of Jordan. Folks might have seen footage of Jordan. It's just something we want to discuss with this lad dance. I want to bring a different feel to the show for this episode to give a break and something light.
Something different.
Something for everybody.
Yeah, that different. I get that. That works. Oh. I understand what you're saying, my dude. Like I told you, man, my family getting ravaged through it, bro. So I definitely need a break. That was actually, you called me in. I was like, you know, yeah, this works. You know what I'm saying? So
when's the night, Faye? When's the night, Faye? We can get on this NFL draft.
Yeah, we do that. How you
want to
do? You want to do it on Zoom or what?
It don't matter. I mean, we whatever we're doing, man, we're supporting your podcast. So however way you want to do it, you let us know.
Right.
We can pull Trent in. We can pull Rayshon in. However we want to do it.
Yeah, that's a bet then. Let's do it then. We'll do it for Wednesday. I got to study up on a little bit more of the players for the draft. Then go from there. But before I let y'all guys go, where is Jordan Love going to go?
I think Jordan Love, they saying he's moving up the charts right now. Yep. I think he will be a first rounder. I definitely think he's a first rounder now.
What's funny? I just lived my sports radio up here, and the rumor is he's going. They looking at him to be a first rounder, but they're looking at the most craziest teams that's gonna get him. There's three teams that they think may take a chance on him, and believe it or not, the Patriots is one of them.
Yeah.
The Patriots.
Now, people want to put that strike that bite lightning in a bottle like they did with Patrick Mahomes. So that's what they're looking for. Because right. If I'm not mistaken, ain't Jordan Love a black kid?
Yep.
Yeah. They're going to be looking for that lightning in the bottle with him. That's what it's about.
And a very athletic kid. Hey.
Patriots don't have enough draft capital to me. They don't have enough to get them, to go up and get them. Now, the Raiders. They could go and get him.
I don't trust Mike Mayock, though. I don't really trust him yet. I don't trust him yet, Faye.
He did get 80 for a four-round pick. 80 messed that up, though.
Yeah, he messed that up. But what is – I've been trying to figure out what is so bad about Derek Carr. Why are they trying to keep getting Derek Carr out of there?
That's the reason I don't trust Mike Mayock, because he's so anxious to get rid of this kid. And what have you really besides? I mean, AD, well, what else really have you put around him?
True.
The boy get hurt? Why? Because he got no line. You know what I'm saying? What have you really put around him?
That year they went 12-4. They could have beat the Patriots that year if you want to
go. Right.
And Faye, me and Damon were just talking about this other day. I think Derek Carr could possibly – I break quarterbacks down into four tiers. Tier one, tier two, three, and four. That's eight quarterbacks per tier. And I'm ranked – you know, I do them by – tier one is the eight best, then the next eight, then the next eight. Derek Carr could easily be he's right there on the borderline of two and three. I don't think he's in that four category, because that four category – that may be Jameis Winston and Jacoby, what's his name from the Colts,
he messed his shoulder up mid-year. I'm not a Colts fan, but his shoulder got messed up mid-year. That's where the season went down, because they went 5-2.
So you would put Brissett in that bottom tier of quarterbacks?
I would. He'll be in three, but
who is our bottom tier quarterback then? Let's just think about it. Who you gonna put down?
Let's see.
Maybe Derek Carr is a bottom tier, tier four quarterback. So let's think about
Daniel Jones. One. Dwayne Haskins. You put Dwayne Haskins.
Oh man, I guess because he's a rookie. We'll put Dwayne Haskins in.
Y'all might think I'm crazy. I would put Trubisky as four.
Yeah. Mitchell Trubisky. Yeah, Jameis Winston. Ryan Fitzpatrick, and all of them cats are four. They're in level four. Drew Lock from the Denver Broncos, he at the bottom tier. And a lot of these guys only been at the bottom because they're young or they're rookie. But, yeah, Drew Lock, Dwayne Haskins, I say Jameis, Fitzpatrick. What y'all think about Josh Allen?
He's not accurate enough. He got Stephon Diggs, but he's going to overthrow him. So –
Allen has to work on his mechanics. That's why he's not accurate. His mechanics is not. He don't release. His release point is bad, and I'm surprised anybody picked that up. When you look at his release point, is bad. It's not coming off his hand the way it's supposed to, because he ain't releasing it at the right point. I really think if you just let work on his release point, that alone would cure his accuracy. Especially on the
I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll tell you what we can do Wednesday night then. We can put our quarterbacks in tiers. Everybody come with their paper. The starting quarterbacks for every team from last season, 32 quarterback, we can put them in tier, which we don't pretty much got that tier four. I just don't know if Derek Carr down there yet. You know,
I just don't think he is, Mike.
He needs a receiver.
Honestly don't think he's a tier. The year they went 12-4, they was talking about him MVP, man. He was up one.
I think Derek Carr at best is in the three with Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield. I think he's in that category.
I'm gonna say this, if you
fold, but it ain't two.
Fabian brought up a great point. Receivers, he can move out of that tier three easy.
Yeah, he just got to get enough talent around him, and I don't think he got enough talent. But I don't think he's no.
What if you drop Aaron Rodgers on the Raiders and put Derek Carr on the Packers?
Raiders are the
one. Well, I do what?
Man. Raiders probably.
Oh, you said Aaron Rodgers.
Raiders probably could have won it.
Aaron Rodgers on the Raiders and Derek Carr.
If you're talking about this past season, they both were suffering from no receiving core. Neither one of them had a receiving core.
Green Bay had a defense, though, I think. And they had a little bit more better receiving
core than
Devontae Adams.
Yeah, Devontae Adams. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, fellas, I got to get out of here, man. We're going to get up Wednesday and do the show. Fade, man, I'm behind you with your podcast. Too, let's keep it pumping.
Me too.
Man.
All right, big.
All right. All right, I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll let y'all win there. All right. We'll be right back with more Council Connect.
This is a part of the show where we go over our housekeeping items. Of course, you can find me on the Twitter at Fade the PSC. Webpage fadethecounselor.weebly.com. You can find my podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Google Podcast, Pocket Cast, and of course, Apple Podcast. We are still looking for more guests to come on the show. We don't mind talking to folks about their view of counseling. Might venture off to do some other different things as well during this time of uncertainty. Right now, I don't know if ASCA's is going to cancel or postpone their plans for conference this year. They're still going forward with that. So hopefully the curve will have been flattened by June 26th. So that way counselors and counselor educators and counselor advocates of all can make it to Seattle this year. I was looking forward to going. The uncertainty, I do not know. But we'll have to play by ear and see. Still looking forward to scheduling with Laura Ross, our National School Counselor of the Year. Hopefully she'll have some time on her schedule so we can have a chat. Looking for any administrators I'd like to jump on, counselor education administrators or student support service administrators, principals, assistant principals like to jump on the podcast and talk about their YA education and how they see the role of school counselor now versus what they've seen in the past and going forward. And I'll be right back with my final thought on staying on schedule. Fabe's final thought. So I am still in thoughts of The Last Dance that I watched the other day. And a thought came to my mind literally 2 minutes ago about what my final thought will be on. For those that probably haven't watched it, The Last Dance is the docuseries that's covering the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls. It's going in depth from background stories of Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson, Dennis Rodman, Michael Jordan, of course, and our little central characters in this docuseries. And one of the things that I've taken out of it was Scottie Pippen was the 122nd paid player in the NBA. His salary was not even a tithe, which is 10% of what Jordan made that year. For those that didn't know, Scottie Pippen signed a 7-year, $18 million contract in 1990, I want to say. And his play on the court grossly surpassed what his play on the court grossly surpassed his pay that he was receiving. He was a small-town kid from Arkansas and didn't look at it as I need a whole lot of money, I just want to take care of my family and have a comfortable living for myself. But to the point where his last two seasons with the Bulls, his agent got to him and said, hey man, you deserve more than this. You shouldn't be this low on the pay scale for what you bring to the table. So Scottie knew he needed to have ankle surgery because of a torn ligament. He didn't have surgery right away. He waited till it was time to go back and play to have surgery.
and show what his worth is to the team. In the docuseries, Jordan, of course, people consider him the greatest player of all time. I don't consider him that. He's one of the top four or five. I'd tier him as far as guard forwards of all time. Not overall. You have to put Kareem and Bill Russell in there. But Bill Russell, to me, he's the greater champion. But that league only had 12 teams in it. But I'm digressing for my final point. On the docuseries, when asked about it during the season, Jordan said we just had to make it through without Scottie. But in a present time, Jordan, when he's being interviewed, saying Scottie's being selfish. Now, what does Scottie Pippen have to do with school counseling? As counselors, we have to know what we are worth in any field. Musicians, I'm a musician. Know your worth. Don't take any gig. Whatever gig you do or job that you take, make sure it's worth your value, what you believe you're worth. And people will pay that. School counselors, we got to know our worth as far as what we do on a daily basis. Going from the design duties to assigned duties. Especially those duties of 504, MTSS/RTI. Having those various duty posts throughout the day. Master scheduling. All this stuff. If an administrator do not see your value, they're not going to apply it towards your duties and your job. And they say, this is an extra bob for me to put somebody out here in the bus ramp every day. They're going to do that. Oh, this person not doing a lot, so I'm having to do the 504s when that's an administrative task. Or they're just in the office a whole lot, so I'm having to do the registration with the registrar. I don't need a registrar, I got the counselors. So I'm going to have the counselors do registration. So, let's spin this back and tie it in now. Know your worth. Know what your role is. Know what you can do. And accentuate that. So that way you'll be treated as such. Of course, educators are underpaid. But as far as our value to the kids and running a comprehensive school counselor program is invaluable to any school in any district. A lot of districts need to take this into account. They need to allocate different funding or personnel to do some of these jobs. And I get it, some districts are small where you have to do it, but there's ways to advocate for your program to show your actual worth in the building. Because if they don't see what you do, they assume what you do and give you things that you know you're not supposed to be doing. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. I want to thank Barbara Truelove, Micah Atwater, and Damon Rambo for hopping on my podcast. We're going to come up with a new podcast this week for tiering quarterbacks. This is just something to take our mind off education and give us a break right now. Thank you for listening. I'm out.